سورة الفاتحة. حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل، نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، لقد كان لكم في رسول الله أسوة حسنة. صلوات Our subject is the Sirat and the history of the Prophet, and as also it is the occasion that we are remembering the Shahadat of Imam Musa Qadim alayhi salam. So at the end of the lecture we had, the majlis we have about the life history of the Prophet, I will mention some details regarding the Imam that we are trying to remember. As we see that thousands of years predictions were made, prophecies were told, messengers had come to inform, books were revealed, and in the books prophecies were made regarding the coming of the last prophet. Such an important event in the history of man, the advent and the birth of the Messenger of Allah, who is going to finish his message, complete the message of Allah. He was going to come to complete the bounties of Allah on mankind, who was going to come to give Islam and the deen and the religion of Allah to the people. Such a big event, and thousands of years we see that the prophets have been waiting and anticipating, the believers have been waiting and anticipating, and even the enemies have been waiting and anticipating. And after all these years, when it actually happened and the birth of the Prophet took place, when the birth of the Prophet took place, after 8 days after the birth of the Prophet, he ended up in the house of Halima. See that. The design of Allah and the planning of Allah is such that we do not know where and how his message is going to be saved, where it's going to be protected, and where it's going to be given to the universe. He ended up in the house of Halima, a normal person, unknowing what is happening. And here she takes the Prophet to her home. And obviously, Allah has to support her. I mentioned last week, if He gives the authority of this deen in the hands of someone who is not masoom, it is Allah's job to support the person so that his deen and his cause is preserved. Otherwise, if he just leaves it in someone's hand without supporting him, then the person's own ignorance, the person's own faults and weaknesses would also harm and destroy the cause. And you see that Allah now, in order to reinforce her faith and make her stronger, throughout the way from Makkah all the way to her village, you see, every tree she passed, the tree would send salam on her. Every stone she passed, the stone would praise her. Every animal she went by, the animal would give her greetings. And she looked at all these things, and obviously when you look at one weird thing, you think it's weird. But if you keep on looking at them, it becomes normal. And Allah did this so that she can get herself habituated to looking at things that are not understood so easily by the human mind. Because of the fact that Allah wanted to protect the Prophet and He wanted to train her so that she could now see that this is not a normal child that she's rearing, but actually a special child. And hence Allah did many things to protect the Prophet in her house. Right away when she came to her house, you see that the garden she had started to blossom, the trees started to bear fruits, the animals started to prosper. And she understood through the things that were happening that this is because of the child. You see, when someone gives you all the time, you know, for example, let's say you give me help all the time. Every month, every other month, you know, you help me out. You know, and you know, I owe you so many things. Right? You are helping me out all the time. Now, if once, after many years of you helping me, I ask, you know, you for something. You know, do you have a dollar? And you give me a dollar. Now obviously, you would also now think that, okay, you know, I owe him more than he owes me. I just give him a dollar, but he has given me so much. So just that dollar, you would say, this is nothing. I should have done more because I owe him more. You see, I owe him more than he owes me. So that $1, if you take and say, okay, here's the dollar, but make sure you remember, you owe me now. You would say that. It would not make sense to say that, because you see that this person has been helping you your whole life, and if you helped him with $1, if he asks you for $1 to buy a soda, then you say, I owe you for the soda, and I'll, you know, make sure you remember this till you die. I mean, you won't do that. Reason is because it doesn't make sense. Because you owe him more than he owes you. This is the reason that Allah gave Halima so much through the Prophet. He gave her so much that if she has breastfed the Prophet, she should never say that he owes me because I have helped him. So you see that in everything in her house, everything prospered in such a way that she knew that this is his favor on me. I haven't done anything for him. I haven't done anything. If I gave him something, it's not because, you know, he owes me. I owe him. I am indebted to him more than he's indebted to me. You see, this is a way in which Allah wanted to make sure that no one has any claim on the Prophet. And no one can say that he owes me, or, you know, I did this for him. Right? And that's the reason she said that the only thing I did for him is feed him. And that too, the milk is from that side which I never had milk. So it wasn't my milk, it was something that he brought with him. Again, you see, another way that she is now understanding. Right? And then, you see, that after that she says, that in my whole time that he was here, for 5 years he was with me. In all this time, I never cleaned him once, never took care of him once. Every time I wanted to clean him, he was already clean. Every time I wanted to change his clothes, his clothes are already changed. And I wanted to see who does this. Who is doing this? I couldn't understand. You see? So now you see what happened. And every time she saw this, she remembered the words of Abdul Muttalib and his warning. And he told her, with this condition you can take my grandson. That whatever you see that might be strange for you, do not mention this to anyone. Right? So now, I want you to understand what happened in the Prophet when he was in the house of Halima. You see? What was the situation there? And then we can understand something from the character of the Prophet. And now, not just Halima, but the whole village. Every house the Prophet went into, you see, that house would prosper. Everywhere. He would go near a tree, the tree would start bearing fruits. He would go to someone's house, in his house you will see there will be prosperity. In fact, there was a woman who was a beggar and a poor woman. Her name was Ummul Masakin. She was so poor, she was called Ummul Masakin, the mother of all the poor. Wow. Right? For example, you heard of the term mother of all wars. So now you see, you hear that her name was mother of all the poor. She was so poor. She came to the house of Halima asking for something. And obviously Halima, whatever she had, she gave, and she saw the child. She saw the Prophet. He was an infant. She went up to him and just kissed him on the head. She liked him. She kissed him on the head. And she went. And it is said that 3 weeks later, in just a matter of a month, she became so rich that she was the richest person in that village. And then you see that she now did not say, I got it for myself. She knew and understood that this prosperity I have is because of this child. So every day she used to go and kiss the feet of the Prophet. She would make it a habit. She would go there and kiss his feet. He was a baby. Yeah, he's still a baby. But I want you to see how Allah is making the environment there. Now you see that when Halima came, she stood by a tree in the middle of the village. The tree was dead. And when she stood next to it, you see the tree started to become green and grow fruits. People saw this. Everyone saw this. Everyone saw. You see, in those days, in the days of those times, people didn't care about gold. People didn't care about silver. People didn't care about jewelry. People didn't care about these things. These things were not as important as animals. A person's wealth is not in how much gold he has, but how many cattle he has. If you have a lot of cattle, then you are a rich guy. Right? Even there's an idiom over there that says that, you know, that if you want to make me the king of this world, just give me 100 red camels. I'll be happy for eternity. That's it. Animals were the most important thing for them. And you see, what Allah did is through the blessing of the Prophet, whichever house he used to go into, their animals would prosper and multiply. And grow. Everyone saw this. Everyone knew what was going on, and everyone understood that he was something special. And in a few months, he ended up becoming the golden child of the village. that now everyone wants to protect him. Everyone wants to make sure that he is all right. Because whatever we have is through him. You see, understand this? Because he's the means. So now they want to protect him. You see, Allah made this environment that even as an infant, the Prophet was like the leader of that village. See that? He was like the leader of that village. And you see, this was something that they wanted to protect because they got so much blessings through him. I mean, it's like, for example, you have a job that you waited for your whole life and you get it. And now when you get the job, you are, for example, it's an excellent job and it's providing you with everything. So you know what? You will try to make sure that you protect your job. You won't do anything to risk it, right? So this is the case that happened in the village of Halima. Now the whole village is like protecting him, looking after him, making sure that he's all right. And now, in all this environment, he is like their leader now. Now understand, with all this attention he gets, and Halima herself said that I've never done anything for him. And so she's also happy that one, she gets all these blessings through him. Abdul Muttalib is giving her income also, and she doesn't have to do anything. I mean, this was the easiest job in the world. I mean, you get your income, perks, bonuses, and no work.
Wow.
Right? You get everything and no work. She's not doing anything for him. He's not, have nothing to do. He's cleaned. He's changed. Everything is done for him. So imagine, she doesn't do anything. So now, what happened is this. Now, I want you to understand who the Prophet is. And you know that I've explained to you before that Allah made the Prophet grow more than other kids. Meaning, like other kids who were 1 year old would look like 1 year old. But at the age of one, the Prophet would look like a 3.5 year old. Right? He would look like a big child. And in maturity also, he was mature. His akhlaq, the way he used to deal with people, the way he used to talk to people. At 9 months, he was talking with people. And you see, this was the Prophet, they understood that, and now you see, understand who the Prophet is. One day he came and complained to Halima. He's just a child now, a year old. He came, he was about 1.5 years, and he complained to Halima. He brought a complaint to Halima. And I want you to see the complaint that he made. You know, he said, you know, I am in the house all day. You know, you keep me here in the shade while you send all my brothers out to work. All of them, they go for work. And I'm over here in the house. You keep me here. He says, this is unfair. He said, mother, because she's also his mother. In Islam, you know, the different ways of relationship is that either you are related to someone through birth, through blood, or you're related to someone through feeding, breastfeeding. And hence he says, mother, and he's referred to as mother. His mother, you are being unfair that you send all my brothers out to work with the sheep. They go out all day long in the heat. And I'm over here relaxing at home. I'm not happy with this. You see, my brothers, understand this. This is the Prophet. He is like the leader of the village. The people regard him like a leader, but he wants to be their equal. He wants to be one of them. And he says that I should also go out. And I should be under the sun. And I should be working with them. You see, something here we can understand, so you can understand the character of the Prophet. I'll give an example so you know what it means. There's a hadith from Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wa salam. He had said that Kunu du'atan nas, to his believers he said, Kunu du'atan nas, be inviters, be those who invite the people to our cause, to the religion. Be people, you should go out and invite people, call them, do da'wah, call them. And then he explains how to do it also. He says, go and call. So obviously you would think that we should go out and start to speak to others. He says, you should go and call the people. And I'll show you the way also, he said. بِغَيْرِ أَلْسِنَتِكُمْ Without using your tongues. Without using your speech. Without using your words. You invite people, but through your character invite them. Now, let me give you an example so you understand this better, what it means. A Jew was walking back to his village. It was near Kufa. A Jew was walking by. And he saw a Muslim. Those days highways were like roads just going through. Saw a Muslim there, and he was there alone. He was walking by the Muslim, and the Muslim said, where are you going? So he said that I'm going to this village. The Muslim said, I'm also going to Kufa. So why don't we walk together? Because it's a lonely highway, anything could happen. We can help each other, protect each other. So they started walking together. And his village was such that just before, you see, there was an intersection where if you want to go to his village, you make a turn and go there, and the other way goes to Kufa. So they walked all the way to that intersection. When the intersection came, the Jew said, well, this is my way I'm going. Fi amanillah. That's it. He's going this way. And he saw that the Muslim is still with him. Muslim is still with him. And he said, what happened? Did you change your mind? I thought you wanted to go to Kufa. You changed your mind. He said, no, I didn't change my mind. Then why are you with me? He said, because our messenger has taught us that when you walk with someone, for whatever extent, if you live with someone or walk with someone, go with someone for whatever extent, just because that person is with you and he has stayed with you, by way of respecting him, when you want to bid farewell, you should walk with him to a certain extent so that you can bid farewell to him. Because you were with me in this way, in this path. Now this is my way of respecting you for being on the path with me. And the Jew now is like, looking at this, is this what your messenger has taught you? Right? Now he's walking with the Muslim. The Muslim said, what happened? Why are you walking with me? Did you change your mind? He said, yes, I changed my mind. I want to see what your religion is about. I said, I want to see what your religion is about. Let's go. I want to learn this. If this is the etiquette, if this is the manners that are being taught in your religion, I want to learn this. So they walked. And they came to Kufa. When they came to Kufa, everyone is greeting them. Everyone is respecting them. Everyone is like standing up for them. And he said, why are you standing up for us? The people said, well, I'm not standing for you. We are standing because of our leader. He said, who's your leader? He's the person who's walking with you. They looked at him. He said, who are you? He said, my name is Ali ibn Abi Talib. The Jew just looked at him and said, you are the leader of the Muslims. If Islam is that deen that teaches the leaders to behave like this, then it has to be from Allah. It has to be from Allah. He became Muslim, and such a Muslim that 3 years later he became shaheed in the Battle of Siffin. You see, this is my friends. Now you understood that example. Now understand what the Prophet is saying. He's a baby still, and he's saying that my brothers are working and I'm sitting here at home. That cannot be. I have to go out with them and I have to suffer the same way they are suffering. If we stay under the same roof, then we also, I must also go out. And I must work also with them. He said, no, you are different. He said, no. I am the same as they are. We live under the same house. And hence, we must all work together. You see, this is the etiquette. This is the manner. And now, with that, you see, he insisted. And the next day, you see that she let him go and he went with the brothers. Now, these, from that time onwards, he would walk with the brothers. And he would be there outside with their sheep that they have. And he would be there on the fields grazing them. And it happened that one of the days that it was there, that there were two young men who came and they grabbed the Prophet and they walked away with him. They walked away with him. The other kids who were with him, they saw that and they ran back to Halima and they said that this child has been taken by someone. Obviously, she did not, I mean, she was shocked at that and became hysterical. And she just went out on the streets of the village and said that he is missing, he is gone. And all the men came out of the village and this is the child they want to protect. This is their golden child. And the men, they all went out and Halima went there with them, you know, and they went to the mountain on which these two men took the Prophet, who's just a baby right now, an infant. So they went with him and they saw that these two men, the Prophet is with these two, and they are kneeling in front of the Prophet. When they saw the group coming, they went away. Halima was crying, and the Prophet told her, why are you crying for, mother? Why are you crying for? Do not worry. These two have been appointed by Allah to protect me. These two have been appointed by Allah to protect me. This happened more than once. On three occasions it happened in his life. The one time, the last time, one of the times it happens was when at the age of 2 years, the Prophet was brought back to Makkah. At the age of 2 years. So he went away at the age of 8 days. After 2 years, he came back to Makkah with Halima brought him back to meet his relatives. To meet the relatives. And then when they encamped outside of Makkah, she went out for certain things. When she came back, she saw the Prophet missing. The news came to Abdul Muttalib. Abdul Muttalib also went out looking and he saw the same scene. And here the Prophet, when he went to the Prophet, he hasn't met the Prophet since 8 days of age. Now he is 2 years old, but he looks like a 6 year old. He came to the Prophet and he looked at him and said, who are you? And here you see that he replied back to him, not just by his name, but his father's name, his grandfather's name, his great-great-grandfather's name, until he reached Adam. He says, this is who I am. And when Abdul Muttalib saw that, he hugged him and he said, who were these men with you? He says, this was Jibreel and Mikael who have been appointed by Allah to protect me. And when he was brought back, obviously Amina, who is the mother of the Prophet, now is really, who hasn't seen her child for 2 years, since he was 8 days old, she has not seen him. Now imagine what her heart is going through. A mother who let go of the child at the age of 8 days. And after all this time, now he's coming back. He's coming back to see. He's coming back to see her. Imagine what she's going through. And the Prophet also has not seen his mother since he was 8 days. And he gets off the hands, he lets go of the hands of Abdul Muttalib and goes into the house of Amina. He hasn't been to Makkah. He walks himself into the house of Amina, where there's a group of women. And he goes in straight into the lap of Amina. Obviously, the meeting was emotional. You know, it was emotional, that meeting. But it wasn't for long, because now Halima took him back and he stayed with Halima for 3 more years. When he was 5 years old, he returned back to Makkah as was the agreement. 5 years you keep him, 5 years she held him, and after 5 years he came back to Medina, or to Makkah, where now he was with his mother. And now as he's with his mother, but not for long, for 1 year he was with her. And in the time and in these days when she was with his mother, you see that it was in those days that Amina had a dream one night. And she dreamed about Abdullah, her husband, the father of the Prophet. She dreamed about him and she made a request to Abdul Muttalib that I want to go to Medina to visit the grave of Abdullah. Abdul Muttalib said, all right. And so she went and she took her son and she took a servant girl by the name of Umm Ayman. Umm Ayman obviously has a long history with Ahlul Bayt. Even she was also with them through the ordeals of Ashura and Karbala. Umm Ayman was there. Right? And here you see that Prophet, he went with her to Medina. They went there, and after a month in Medina, she was on her way back from Medina to Makkah. An hour from Makkah, an hour from Medina is a place called Abawa. It was at this place that she fell ill. And she fell ill and she died. So now you see that the Prophet, who had lost his father before he was born, now has lost his mother at the age of 6. And Umm Ayman was the one who brought him back to Makkah. The Prophet, throughout his life, remembered his mother. You know, he remembered his mother in such a way that you see that when the Muslims wanted to go to make Umrah to Makkah, and on that trip, the Treaty of Hudaybiyah happened. It was on that trip that it happened, Hudaybiyah, and they wrote down the treaty, peace treaty on that. He went there, he got all the Muslims ready, and they went to Abyare Ali, or what we know as Hajjat Hajara, where we wear ihram. Anyone who wants to go to Hajj or Umrah from Medina, that's where they go to wear ihram. So all the Muslim army, everyone who was going, wore ihram. They're all going in ihram now. They made the niyat, the intention to go to Makkah for Umrah. They made the intention to go for Umrah. And on the way you see that the place of Abawa was a little bit out of the way. Not, it was on the way, but you have to make a turn to go there actually and to come back and to get on the highway. He made this whole army turn towards Abawa. Said, before we go to Umrah, I am going to go to the grave of my mother. He went, the whole army went with him. Everyone was there, they all went there. The whole Muslim, wearing ihram and everything, they're going to Abawa. They see him that as he gets to the grave of his mother, he goes to the grave and starts crying like a baby. Remembering his mother. The whole army was stopped so that he can visit the mother. So that he can, and this is something that we all should understand, you know. A person came to one of our imams and he told the imams, you know, he asked the imam that, you know what, I make dua but it's never answered. It's never answered, and what should I do? He said, what should I do to get my prayers answered? I ask Allah for something, but I see it never happens. What should I do to increase my acceptance of my prayers? So he said that, go to the grave of your mother and father and ask through them. Ask through them and Allah will accept your dua. This is the importance of parents in Islam. A mother and father is someone that if nothing is working out, if you ask Allah through them, you see that Allah will answer. Allah will accept it. This is the importance. And now you see that when the akhlaq of the Prophet, the etiquette of the Prophet, when he goes to Abawa and he goes to the grave of his mother, you see, he has shown not through his words but through his examples what it means. And this was the sunnah of the Prophet, became the sunnah of the Prophet. You know that when you go to the grave of your elders, he went to his grave of his mother and started crying. And you see that it was Hind, the wife of Abu Sufyan, who, when she came for Uhud, had made this intention. One of the to-do lists that she had made, right? One was obviously to kill Ali. The other was to eat the heart of Hamza. And the, you know, and in that list, one of the things to do was to desecrate the grave of Amina and burn her bones. You know, this was one of her list, the things that she came to do. The only thing she was able to do was to eat the heart of Hamza in the Battle of Uhud. Right? Now the other thing she wasn't able to do because of the fact that the battle went wrong and they couldn't win, and hence they had to go away from there. But just here is the simple equation that I want to give you. The sunnah of the Prophet is that when you go to a grave, you cry. The sunnah of Hind is that you go to the grave and desecrate it. So Muslims have to decide which sunnah do they follow. Which way do they follow? Which way of life do they follow? Do they follow the Prophet that when you go to someone's grave, then you remember and cry over the grave? And if you follow the sunnah of Hind, then it was Hind who wanted to desecrate the grave, not cry over it, but to desecrate it and disrespect it. So those who disrespect the graves, they follow the sunnah of Hind. And those who cry over the graves, they follow the sunnah of the Prophet. You see, understand this. And now we just need to decide whose sunnah do we follow. Whose sunnah do we follow? So now, if you go to the grave of the Prophet today and cry over it, you're just doing what the Prophet has done. And if you go to the grave and say that it's bidah to cry, then this is the sunnah of Hind, because she is the one who established it. Right? She is the one who established it, the wife of Abu Sufyan. Right? So now, this is what we see when we look at the way of the Prophet and what it means, what he was there. My friends, because of the lack of time, I'm not going to go into the life history of Imam Kazim al-Islam. Just one thing I will mention so that we can understand something from this, you know. His history is vast and there are many things to learn from it. Just one issue I will mention here so that you understand one thing from his life at least, that we are here remembering him. He was one of those, he had certain things that were done to him that it wasn't done for any other Imam. Right? One of the things that was done to Imam Musa Kazim as way of oppression and zulm is that he was kept in jail for a very long time. He was kept in jail for a very long time. You see, none of the other Imams were kept in jail that long. In there, 1 year probably and taken out, finish. Imam Musa Kazim was kept in jail for a long time. Right? Harun Rashid was the king of the time, the Khalifa of the time. He was an Abbasi king, and the Abbasis came into power with one slogan. I don't have time to explain this, so I want you to understand this. They came up with a slogan, and their slogan was very simple. And you see, they knew that if they want to get rid of Umayyads, they have to fight them, they have to You know, they need the people to be against the Umayyads. It wasn't hard to get the people to go against the Umayyads, but it was hard to get the people to come on your side. Because the Umayyad kings were oppressing everyone. They were oppressing everyone. Right? So you can just go to them and say that we are going to fight the oppression of the Umayyads, the zulm of the Umayyads, everyone will come. Of course, yeah, sure. Right? We will all come there to fight. But how are you going to get the people on your side? Because they will say that, yeah, we'll fight them, but who are you? You see, who are you? Understand this. My friends, understand this. So now, when you look at this, they needed to come up with a catchy slogan that will not only make the people fight against the Umayyads, but also to make them fight with Bani Abbas. So what did they come up? They come up with a slogan that says, Ar-Ridha li-Ali Muhammad. Now you see the slogan and what it was and what it means. My friends, just understand what is diplomacy and politics. Understand this. The people, they are attracted to Ahlul Bayt. They will be with you if you are with Ahlul Bayt. So now, what happened? They said, Ar-Ridha li-Ali Muhammad, that the rulers will rule according to the pleasure of Ali Muhammad. He says that the Umayyads do not rule according to their pleasure. We need rulers who would rule according to the pleasure of Ali Muhammad. According to their pleasure. You see what kind of a slogan it was. They didn't say Al-Hukumat li-Ali Muhammad or Al-Wilayat li-Ali Muhammad. They didn't say the rule is for Ali Muhammad. They said the rulers should work with Ali Muhammad. They shouldn't rule, but the rulers should rule. See, understand this. See how they made the slogan. Ar-Ridha, that as long as they are happy with us, you know, we will rule. They will not rule. They didn't say Al-Wilaya li-Ali Muhammad, that the authority is with Ali Muhammad. Let's give it to them, it's theirs. Right? So this is the mentality of these people. And they came to power using this phrase, Ar-Ridha li-Ali Muhammad. They came in charge. And after they came in charge, they got rid of the Umayyads. They got the people to come with them. They even got a lot of the people from Bani Hashim to come with them. And they made very close relationship. And then they started to kill the Sadat, the children of Ahlul Bayt. They started to kill the Shias of Ahlul Bayt. So now, the issue comes, is that listen, if you want the people to come on your side and you're using this slogan, Ar-Ridha li-Ali Muhammad, then if you have a choice to put Musa Kazim in jail or not, then it only makes sense that you don't put him in jail. Because if you put him in jail, then the people will say, well, what is this? Here you're saying that you want to please Ahlul Bayt, and now you yourself are putting them in jail. So my friends, understand, I want you to understand why, just this one question today. Why was Imam Musa Kazim put in jail? It made no political sense. It goes against common sense that when you are saying that, listen, I am going to rule with his pleasure, but at the same time I'm going to put him in jail. I mean, it makes no sense. What does it make? I mean, so why was he put in jail? Just understand this one. And why was he put in jail for so long? The other imams were there also, but they were not put in jail. Why was this imam put in jail? Just understand this much, and then probably we will know what it means to be a Shia. My friends, understand this. And make it clear in your mind. Imam Kazim went to jail for 14 years. More than any other imam, he was put in jail. And it made no sense for Harun Rashid to put him in jail. If Harun Rashid had a choice, if he had two choices, should I put him in jail or shouldn't I put him in jail, then he would have chosen that I shouldn't have put him in jail or I shouldn't put him in jail. He would have made that choice. But Harun Rashid had no choice but to put Imam in jail. And why did he have a choice? My friends, understand this. Because the Shias of his time were more smarter and more educated and more knowing of Allah's deen than in any other time. You see, Imam Kazim came after the training of Imam Bakr and Imam Jafar al-Sadiq. Who had raised the ma'rifat of the Shias. So now that they were so smart, it was impossible for Harun to leave Imam Musa Kazim outside. You see, when the Shias are dumb, then the tyrants don't put the Imams in jail. You see, even if they're outside, the Shias are useless. You see, but when the Shias are strong, that's when you see the tyrants put the Imams in jail. Because they know that if these two things, if these two components are put together, if these two components are put together, then it becomes dangerous. Because they know the Imams are always strong. But now, there are only a few times when the Shias were also strong. And that's the reason Imam was put in jail, so that the Shias could be killed. You see, this is the reason these two components have come together. And in our time, you see these two components have come together. Understand what I'm saying? These two components have come together. It was not long, 2006. When the statement was made by the leader of the Shias in Lebanon. When he said that now the world will know who are the Shias of Fatima al-Zahra. Because not only is it the leaders that are strong, they were always strong. We always had strong leadership. That is a promise of Allah. We always had strong leadership, but we never had strong Shias like we have today. You see, in those days, the Imams were alone, standing alone. No one was there to help him. Now if a student of the Imam stands up, you see all these people are there to fight for him. This is because Ma'rifat has gone. This is that level of understanding has gone up. This is the thing. How much is it that they are depending on us to stand? Imams are stand. They are looking at us to stand. And when you look at that statement he has made, the Shias of Fatima, why Fatima? You know, why Fatima? I really understand this, you know, really. You know, just imagine, just one thing I'll tell you, inshallah. Imagine yourself, just imagine yourself on the Day of Judgment. On the Day of Judgment, when you will meet Fatima. When you will meet Fatima, and when she will ask you a question that you knew about our sacrifices. You knew about my son's blood that is spilled. You knew about my son's head being cut. Tell me, what did you do for my cause? Oh, this thought. This is this thought that will tear the heart of any Shia. Any Shia, this thought that what would he say to Fatima on the Day of Judgment? What would he say to Fatima on the Day of Judgment? How will he reply to her? How can he reply to her and say, I haven't done anything? This is what makes the heart of the Shia strong. Because Fatima is with us and we know that one day we will meet her. And we have to answer to her. Really, that is what makes us going. Today, if we see that it is the shahadat of Musa Kazim. You see, Imam Musa Kazim was a unique shaheed. He was a unique shaheed, he was a unique martyr. You know why? Because all the other people, all the other imams who were martyred before him, if you look at all their martyrdom, and if you look at all the way that they have died, and if you look at how they died and what happened to them, you see Imam Musa Kazim, everything that happened to the previous imam, if you put it all together, you see that was the shahadat of Imam Musa Kazim. He was oppressed before his death. He was oppressed before his martyrdom. He was oppressed after his martyrdom. 14 years he was put in a jail, in a cell that you couldn't even stand up. He had become so thin. He had become so thin that you could see his bones through the skin. That you can see his bones through his skin. And when they martyred him, they gave him poison to kill him. Then just like Imam Hassan had turned green, you see that Imam Kazim also turned green through the effect of that poison. He turned green to the effect of that poison. And then you see that just like Imam Hussein was left on the battlefield, he was left naked on the battlefield. Imam, like an orphan, was left on the street. He was left on the street, and people were asked to come and beat him up, and people would come and beat him up. And you know why this was done? It wasn't done to hurt the imam. He is already dead. Why are you beating his corpse? Why are you beating his dead body? It is just to enrage the Shias so they can see the imam and they can grieve. Oh,